Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up, what up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name's Nick Engvall, and I'm here with my guys Robbie and Mike. What's going on, fellas?
Not much, man. Happy to be here with my guys talking about some sneakers. Happy Monday.
Man, I'm doing fantastic. It was supposed to rain in Portland, and it kind of didn't, so it was just like a nice cloudy day. And I'll take that in view.
That's definitely a Portland mindset right there. Nice cloudy day. You got to enjoy that one.
Didn't rain in June.
Small victories, man.
Yep, definitely. So before we get into it, we'd like to shout out anybody that gives us a review. We're going to go with Mr. Mata 99 this time around. Left us a review on iTunes. We just appreciate you guys taking the time to leave a review for us. It helps us reach new people and grow the podcast and hopefully get some more people involved and get more feedback and creating more conversation with all of you that are listening. And just shout out to all of you for listening, because honestly, like, it's super dope to see how many people are listening to the podcast every episode. And I just can't say thank you enough. It's just like, I'm super appreciative of everybody taking the time to listen. So.
Heck yeah. Thank everybody out there. This is such a cool thing for us to do. And so even cooler that you guys are listening to us. So we appreciate every time you guys tune in.
It's like make a wish every time we record. So thank you.
just to kind of give you a little bit more insight into our relationship, before we started recording, Robbie sent over one of the greatest questions I've probably ever received in a text message. And it was with a picture of Michael Cera and said, "How funny would it be if DMX looked like Michael Cera but still sounded like DMX?"
Murder. No, that's
I can't even see it, though. Now I want him to sound like it. I see the picture, and I want him to just sing the Rough Riders anthem for everything. Do it.
Yeah, that's what we need. Michael Cera singing the Rough Riders anthem.
Or wear the hood at. That'd be funny.
That'd be so Michael good. Cera, if you hear us, please. For us, record that.
Yeah, if anybody knows, you know, just put in a request for us, you know.
I mean, that's YouTube gold. So he's been kind of on the DL. That would be a nice little career move. Even if they were to dub DMX, whatever you need to do, just make DMX Michael Cera, and the world's a better place.
Yep, that'd be hilarious.
All agreed.
Hashtag Stone Thoughts. I'm scared.
I mean, so speaking of Stone Thoughts, I think we're just going to jump into the first look at the Jordan High React. I don't know what they were thinking.
They were on hard drugs.
That was past Stone Thoughts. That was something else.
Now, if you haven't seen the shoe, it's really interesting. I don't hate it, but I just don't think that it was done. This isn't it, basically. It's really, it's got some details that I like, but I don't think all of them work together well, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yeah. You know, we talk a lot about on this podcast about things being done in a thoughtful manner. This was not in a thoughtful manner. I don't know what they were thinking, because you look at the sneaker, I don't know what 20 different types of materials are on it, but the toe box is leather. Look at the mud guard in front of leather, but the side panels, they look like either a wax canvas or some kind of plastic. He got this 3D swoosh on the lateral side, but the medial side's flat. The Jordan logo is just an outline of the wings with some lines going through it. And has, I mean, I like the React bottoms. Like, we talked about this before. React bottoms are cool, but if you're going to do an Air Jordan 1 React, I mean, follow the path of the Flyknit Jordan 1 where it still pay like perfect homage to the, where it came from and only change the material. This was, I don't know. This reminds me of one of those, they, you know, the release that they were doing for the female, like the jester and all those stuff like that.
Yeah,
not for me, but
I mean, if they're going to take a cue from another shoe, they could take the Converse. I think it's the All-Star 2 or 2.0. They put like a Lunar Lawn drop insole in there.
Exactly.
You can have a Jordan 1 and just make it more comfortable by shifting the innards. But like, my biggest qualm comes from the fact that they still call it a Jordan 1 Retro High React when it's definitely kind of a mid and there's nothing retro about that shoe. So if you were to market it terminology wise a little bit differently, I think it would stick. Because once you put Retro Jordan in the same sentence, my brain goes to a very specific place. And that's a great departure from what my eyes do when I see these. So that's really my take on it.
Since this is so early, I don't know if it'll be interesting to see if there's actually retro thrown on there. Because I definitely agree. It's too overdone in my opinion to be called a retro, but you make a good point with like the Chuck 2s, right? They, you know, simple, you know, it didn't do well. I think basically because all the Chuck 2s had a solid white outsole and, you know, like people that wear Chucks just want the same old, same old. I think they could do something like that with the Jordan 1. I mean, honestly, if Nike has a hard time selling Jordan 1s or any Jordan retros in the next, you know, say 2 to 3 years, that's a quick solution to get people to give you more money, is just like drop in like a better insole, keep everything looking the same, but make sure that it's going to be more comfortable. I mean, in theory, I would assume that's what this is about, because, you know, the React stuff, like the Proto React is a super comfortable shoe. I mean, it's obviously not a retro product, but just the cushioning on that shoe, it just feels so nice. And I think in theory, like adding it to a Jordan 1 is a great idea, but it is really weird how many different things are going on the shoe. Like I actually like some of the things. I feel like the medial side, like, you know, exaggerated, like looks like maybe a rubberized swoosh or something, kind of looks cool and could look cool on the right design. But then you've also got like this stripe up the middle with the extended like pull tab on the tongue, and that's also too much going on. Not to mention the fact that the React looks really tall. I think,
yeah, I'm like a boot.
Yeah, I think that everything combined makes it really look like a boot, and that's kind of tough to get
the
over.
The pull tab reminds me of what Nike's been doing a lot the past year. Like, let's just throw a pull tag on the 97 or Huarache, and let's just keep banging out this theme. If one person can rock this shoe and make it look good, it's Desus from Desus and Marrow, if you ever watch Showtime. Like, yeah, pulls off some fits wearing some of the ugliest Jordans. Like, he's just so New York, where it's just like, oh, I'm a rocket. Is this, it makes my fit work. So, like, he makes it elevated. He's the one person on earth who can make this shoe work. So,
this was the perfect time for them to go ahead and expand that Protro thought process to Jordan 1. They would have done it right. You would have seen players on the court next season. Heck, you would have seen players on the court in the Drew League starting out like in these bad boys. This was the perfect time to update this sneaker just a little bit. I mean, it's already leather, so it has some pretty solid construction. Go ahead and throw some, you know, some more lockdown, maybe some fly wire in the sides, hitting the end of the leather. Throw in the drop-in React midsole. You have a performance sneaker you're going to bank on next season.
Yeah, I think that would be a huge win for them. I think the only downside to that is because they called the Kobe line Protros, and then Jordan had the Proto Reacts, there would be some confusion there for a little while. But I mean,
that's true.
Once they started moving through it, though, like, you know, 6 months from now, people wouldn't even think about the original Protro or Proto React. And I think they're, in my opinion, pushing the Protro stuff feels like the right move regardless. But I don't know. It's definitely a really interesting take on the shoe. I think if you want to check it out, we're looking at the Wear Testers site, WearTesters.com, and it's just like a, you know, the first look at the Air Jordan 1 High React. It's the title of the post. But,
sorry, I keep looking up the NBA to see who's MVP, so we can talk about that. And
yeah. The other kind of news story I thought was interesting that Mike found on Nice Kicks was the possible return of the DMP Defining Moments Jordan 6 next year.
Months early? Like a whole year early? And they're talking.
Hey, you know, it's what was it? I think it was like February of next year. So, I mean, that's only, 8 months?
Hey, it gives me time to save that $220 I'm going to charge for it because, you know, that he likes to throw extra $25 because of some gold paint on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the shoes I've always, like, the Dornbecker 6 was another one, and when I didn't get it, I was like, okay, it wasn't meant to be in the first place, so whatever. But that DMP 6 is one of the hardest non-OG Jordans in the history of man. Like, you could put, like, flint and stone together, and no spark will come. Only the DMP 6 will appear.
I mean,
gorgeous.
It's the perfect black and gold sneaker. It's crazy because, well, my computer wants to act stupid, but at the moment when I look at it, it's so understated that it pops. I mean, you would expect all the Drake's OVO sneakers to look this clean, but for some reason they can't replicate this. This is probably one of my favorite sixes that I, you know, just like Robbie is like, well, couldn't have it just yet. So best believe in 2020, I'll be sitting in my, you know, my computer or my sneakers app, just, you know, testing the waters.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you've listened to the podcast for a while, I shared the story of like how I got this release originally in 2006. So it's, to me, it's like, it's the perfect combination. And I think like, it kind of set off the whole pack thing. And so it's got like, it's almost like, you know, it's not, it's almost like the double stack Zoom as far as the double stack nostalgia with it, because it's got the first, you know, the storyline of the defining moments and the championships, but also the release, the first kind of release that had multiple shoes. And, you know, like you said, I think it was done right. It was subtle, but like, poignant, and to me that's how the best retro colorways are, right? Like, once they get over the top and once they go too far, everybody kind of just like dismisses them. And if you can keep it like this, I think, you know,
why do we keep over the shattered backboard? Because it's a classic shoe. Like, it's not OG, it's not like the original, but it's just when you do it right, it could seamlessly slide in to whatever time frame the original silhouette came out. Like, that's what makes a great transcendent non-OG Jordan. If it can just go into a time frame and you wouldn't know it wasn't an original. Like the Chrome Jordan 2, like everybody thinks the black and chrome Jordan 2 was an OG, not everybody, but it's a common misconception. It's just so good that you wouldn't know it was a new thought or an afterthought. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well said. I think, you know, you're absolutely right. The shatter backboard is a great example of that too, because it's in line with the DMPs in the sense that there's a backstory there that, you know, you can pull on the nostalgia string a little bit, but give it obviously a new color option. But kind of related, what do you guys think of that Jordan 1, the Gym Reds that are coming out this weekend? I think it's this weekend, right?
The Not For Resale Light?
Yeah.
They're not bad. Actually, I like them.
Reduced fat dressing. Right?
I mean, it's pretty much what it is. I mean, I didn't realize until I saw a bunch of people stand it, and I went to go look at it. Only thing different, I think, is the color of the swoosh, if I'm not mistaken. But from the early reviews and pictures I've seen, the leather quality looks pretty solid. I mean, it's a classic black and red. You can never go wrong with that. I mean, it's one of those that if I catch it and I can, maybe get a discount on it, I'll pick it up. But not something I'm really, searching out for. But, I mean, hey, I like to just pick up Jordan 1s on a whim, so you never know.
Man, the homie Chris Elliott posted some photos of it, and I was just talking to him before we started recording. And I was like, man, you make that shoe look so much better than any stock photo does. And with a pair of the right pants, a nice sock, those shoes go from like a GR, you'll see them for 120 at the outlet, to a very, very attractive shoe.
Yeah.
I'm about it. It's because there's so many high density red regions of Jordan 1s. So you think of like a Chi-Town or a Bread Toe. There's like red is the dominant color. Seeing it just on the ankle and swoosh here, it's like and really... it's like a better version of a black toe in my book. And I can live with that. I like it.
Yeah, I do them too. The only thing I was noticing is Chris's pictures make him look so dope. But I was looking at the StockX site and they have them up there with their 360 photo, and the cut of them looks a little like funky to me. It almost looks like a mid in their photo. So I'm wondering kind of like how they're going to turn out. Obviously when they're on foot, they look really dope, but I'll probably still try to get a pair. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll fit. So you'll be able to actually go put your hands on them in the store.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping. I know
they're trying to market them as the alternate Chicago's, because it has a reverse colorway to Chicago. But I don't think that's going to help move them. I think the Steelers are going to sit around for a while. It's going to be one of the ones like the remember the Turbo Greens had like that their counterpart that was that black and gray one.
Hyper Crimson.
Thank you. And those are still floating around. I think it'd be like that. It has the same feel to me. Like it's still a nice shoe, definitely worth picking up, but it's not going to be probably super popular to the masses just because it's how people are. We talk about it all the time. It's nothing. No one's hyping it up too much. It's not, and it's in the middle of a slew of crazy. Like, there's been so many Jordan 1s coming out as of late, especially with all the, the SB, Travis Scott, all that good stuff lately. I think they're going to hang around for a bit.
Yeah. I just counted. I have 14 pairs of Jordan 1s. So it's just like at this point, the justification is non-existent. There's no reason why. But you can always find an excuse depending on what I'm wearing, a little bit more black would be nice.
So, story of my life. Yeah. Story of my life.
Yeah.
No.
So I guess hopping into the main topic that we wanted to get into tonight, and it's it's a tough one because personally, I have shopped at this place many, many times over the years. But basically, if you haven't read about it, Premier Boutique, which is in the Bay Area, was essentially given a letter by Nike saying that they're closing their account and they are closing the store. And they were around for, I don't see it on there, but 12, 13 years, maybe. I know for sure they were around. Man, it just sucks to see something like this, but I wanted to read kind of like the gist of it, and we'll put a link in the description. But basically the letter says, Dear Aaron's the owner of Premier Boutique. And it says Nike is constantly evaluating its distribution needs in the dynamic and competitive marketplace for athletic footwear and apparel. Unfortunately, we have recently determined that the Premier Boutique account no longer aligns with our distribution strategy. Accordingly, by this letter, Nike provides notice that your account will be closed. That's all he puts in there, you know, officially from the letter. But essentially, it's, you know, he's had an account for 11 years, and, you know, with basically no warning, Nike decided to shut him down. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think it's bogus. I mean, I've never been to Premier, but I mean, like you said, they've been around for a good amount of time, and I just don't see. I mean, I don't know if maybe something underlying with the partnership. I mean, clearly we don't know. We're not there, but it seems weird because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but Premier is one of those like staple boutiques of like the Bay Area. Like you go visit, you're going to Premier, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's in San Mateo, and it's, you know, what, maybe a block or two from Atlas Skateboards, and it's in a great little shopping district. So it's really a shame in a sense. I think it is one of those places that if you're on like the peninsula, as you would call it in the Bay Area, or like basically on the west side of the Bay, it's definitely one of those places that people would go, and it's just like a shopping, like the San Mateo, like downtown area is very like shopping, nightlife, dinner, you know, kind of place. And I mean, honestly, Premier is like I really like the store layout. It's just kind of super clean. And it was one of the first that I remember going into and like really appreciating the fact, like the layout of the store, where, you know, back 10, 12 years ago, I think a lot of stores just like took the Foot Locker model and were like, put it all on the wall and that's it, you know. Nothing against it, because that can work for you, especially if you're in a mall. But it's like, it kind of, in my opinion, Premier was like, you know, kind of pushing forward that notion of like having, you know, ironically, like Premier Boutique, right? But
an experience.
Yeah.
What's really crappy is how at the end it gets like the personal level, to where like Nike is the bottom line for a lot of businesses, and they rely on those retro sales, and they rely on just people wanting to buy that product. So his family is affected, his living situation be affected, his employees' situation are affected. It's just, to have no kind of warning, well, the letter's a warning, but rationale, well, no, it's not a warning. That's like hey, it's already happened, by the way. You don't have this anymore. But just like the lack of rationale is it's a very scary thing, because we talk about politics kind of a lot, not that much, but like, and it feels like the world's becoming increasingly authoritative, where it's like, this is what you're getting, and we don't care if you like it, it's best for us, or this is what we want to do, accept it. And it was a scary refresher on how it doesn't have to be like world policy. It doesn't have to be really big, hot button issues. It could be something as simple as a small business being ripped of product by the supplier and being forced to deal with the consequences without knowing what they did wrong or what they done better. So it's just very scary, I guess, is the long-winded way I was trying to describe the situation. It's very scary.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of variables to it, right? You know, the market right now is looking a lot less like, you know, Premier is not like you're not going to get Off-White there, and you're not going to get the high-end brands. And it's more of like Stussy and, you know, like more like I would call classic streetwear style. And I think that, you know, the market is definitely shifting towards a more, you know, more expensive styles and stuff. But I also don't think that means that, you know, this store shouldn't exist. But I think there's a few things that for me to take away. The first is, you know, a lot of these small businesses depend so heavily on Nike and Jordan Brand, right? Like the market is so filled with Nike and Jordan Brand that, you know, I think he says 50% of his product or 50% of his revenue comes from. And I would just encourage people, like, you know, we've talked about opening a store on the podcast before. And if you want to open a store, keep in mind that if half your business comes from one place, it's you're not in a good place to, you know, if they pull the rug out from under you. And I think the second thing for me is I'm really disappointed in the way that it sounds like that the way that this is being handled. You know, obviously there could be many sides to the story. There could be, you know, it's like the saying, you know, there's your side of the story, my side of the story, and then there's the truth. And, you know, we're only seeing one side of it. And I do think that regardless of what the truth is, the worst part about it is that there's no warnings, at least from this, you know, from the way he puts it. There's no warnings. This is a complete surprise. And I think that's a terrible way for any business to do business. It's one thing if Nike's going out of business and they realize, oh my God, we're going out of business. We're closing everything. Everybody else down the chain has to deal with that, right? But Nike's incredibly successful. You know, I would imagine that the Premier account is, you know, it's probably one of the, like, better independent accounts in the Bay Area, but it's by no means like a massive, you know, account, right? And I think that's like the shittiest part about, you know, reading this and hearing that they're not going to be around much longer. I think that,
yeah, man.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say that, man. I hope this kind of for store owners. And actually, other brands, I hope it builds better relationships between the two, because clearly they see that, you know, Nike, they care about the bottom line. Everyone does. But yep. Nike is clearly riding the wave of this super expensive luxury streetwear wave right now. And they're just knocking everything down in a way. Like, they're knocking, like, literally, the store's been in business for years and doing well for themselves. And they know full well that most people's sales are coming from Nike. Man, I'm hoping that these brands can come together with these boutiques, like, you know, your Adidas, your New Balance, and Under Armour. I hope they can build stronger partnerships to where they're not being so reliant on Nike. I mean, I'll openly admit that most of my collections fall in Nike, but I'm hoping that this will help to maybe build more popular product or better product, as I say, from the other brands that's going to be, you know, more widely available, just like Nike's are, to where they can counteract that, you know, huge piece of pie that the stores are having to put into their stores just to keep the lights on. This sucks, man. I feel bad for those guys. And just thinking what you're talking about, Nick, you know, they're going off to, you know, these off-white, these, with Matthew Williams, and, you know, they're trying to stay on those ways. What happens to stores like Stussy and Undefeated, who are still traditional, streetwear brands? Like, they're not going out there. As far as I know, I haven't been to either one of the stores in a couple of years, but as far as I know, they're still selling traditional, you know, skate, street-inspired streetwear. So are they going to be next on their hit list of, hey, sorry guys, you're not selling off-white. We don't want to deal with you. It makes you wonder, like you say, it's a fearful thing. Like, what's going to happen to these long-standing brands that have such great reputations in the world of sneakers and streetwear?
Yeah, I mean,
no,
go ahead. Go ahead, Robbie.
All the same, good point. Go ahead.
Yeah. So one thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is, like, the parent company that owns Undefeated also owns Stussy. So there's a lot of like conglomerate stuff that goes on behind the streetwear world now to keep these brands afloat. What's up?
They used to own Bait too, but they dropped Bait, so now it's its own.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
But as much as, like, I don't want to dismiss, like, how shitty this is, but I do, like, kind of want to put on, like, my business you know, mindset with this a little bit, and also suggest to people that have sites, have stores or friends that do, you know, if you look at this, if you look at the way that Premier does things online, it, the experience needs a little bit of help, in my opinion. And I don't, you know, I don't want to like pick on it too much, but I just want to point out that, you know, stuff like the angle of the way the photos are, the quality of the site, like the user experience of the site, like when you're clicking through, you know, looking for shoes, you want to be able to make that very easy for people. And you want to have it be consistent. So like when you're taking pictures of, you know, like apparel or accessories or stuff like that, you want that to always have the same look and feel across all of your, you know, products. And it's really hard to do. And I say this because I want to reiterate how difficult it is not only to just get the accounts and have the money to open a store, but to really do it in a way that, you know, the pinnacle boutiques that we all look at, like an Undefeated or a Kith or Concepts or any of those stores that have found success over the long term, there's a lot of work that goes into it. There's a lot of, you know, manpower that you need behind the scenes to make it all happen. And I think that I'm just going to guess, based on Nike's closing of the account, these are the types of things that could factor into it. You know, you could go down the list of all the, you know, possibilities, right? Because everybody wants to point out that every retail store is backdooring product. And personally, I don't care about that. I think that if you want to sell, if your job is to sell product, then you sell product. Like you can't really hold somebody to a standard of like, this has to go out the front door. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to support us. Like if I was buying from a local spot here and I knew they were backdooring most of their product, I wouldn't be buying from them. But I also understand that like a lot of these stores have a lot of money in inventory and they've got to move a lot of product, and a lot of product doesn't move quickly, but they've got to move the stuff that does move quickly that much faster to cover the difference of the stuff that sits. And it's a hard game to play, but you know, those, you know, that's one of those reasons that gets tossed around a lot. There's also, you know, plenty of other reasons. I know that, like, you know, I don't want to like call anybody out, but like there's financial reasons, there's, you know, potential, you know, conflicts with whoever else has accounts. Like, you know, in the Bay Area, there's plenty of other accounts. There's, you know, there's other newer accounts in the Bay Area that have a more polished and more refined like approach. And even if that's just on the web, you know, like you can distinguish yourself in person and you can have a great customer base. But at the end of the day, the companies that are looking at you, the customers that are looking at you will always look at the internet first, in my opinion. And it sucks because it's not a direct representation of how good the people are that work or own in a store. But as someone who's worked in this business for a long time, if I was a sales rep for Nike and looked at a lot of the sites that are on the internet, most of them I would not want to have as a part of my, you know, my group of retailers or partners, because you want to have such a high standard for the way your product is presented, because that's ultimately what keeps the product moving. And, you know, obviously there's exceptions to that, right? Like you can look at a Kohl's and you can see there's, you know, Monarch sitting on the shelf for $40 and nobody cares how that shoe is presented online. But in the world of sneakers, as we know it, perception is everything. And I'm really disappointed that Premier is going to be closing. I also, you know, understand that there's probably a lot of things that influence that decision. I think it's really shitty how, at least it seems to have been handled from Nike, nobody responding to him with more details, them just saying like, we can't talk about it. Aaron not hearing from the Jordan rep, all these things are like really, really shitty. And honestly, like I wanted to like shout out like him putting this out there in the way that he did and just kind of putting, laying it all out there and saying like how disappointed he is without saying anything negative is super commendable. And I don't think most people would have put it out there in the same way. I think we all know people that own online stores or retail stores that would be on Twitter just absolutely irate over it. And, you know, props to him for not doing it. So,
Yeah, man, he did it the right way. Hopefully that in turn kind of comes back to him and he can, his next endeavor will be something great. So good luck to those guys out there, man. I wish the best for them.
Everything's 30% off on their website right now.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, if you want something, if you want to support him, obviously it would help them out quite a bit because he's got to figure out how to pay his lease and, you know, and close everything up. And so, like, you can go to their site. It's premierboutique.com and closing 30, the code for 30% off anything on site. So, and if obviously if you're in the Bay Area and you're listening to this, swing by and, you know, just check out the store. It's really a dope spot. I don't know how much longer it's going to be open, but I think there was a couple.
How do you say it, through the end of the month? Because I think he has the. I maybe read that wrong, but I thought it was the end of the month.
Yeah, but so I wanted to wrap up by picking a couple of shoes this week because we haven't done that for a while. So, what do you guys? You guys got anything on the radar that you're looking for?
I feel like a dick, because it's Nike. But the React 270, the 270 React.
Yeah.
I know which one you're talking about. I like that one a lot.
It's like, no, I'm not going to tell that joke. But yeah, it's just, I really like that shoe. It's awkward right now in context of what we just talked about, but it's still pretty. So.
Yeah. And I didn't want to make it all about, you know, shitting on Nike.
No, you did.
You know, it's just one of those. It's just a tough thing. But because I'm also going to follow up and pick, like, my shoe of the week is actually, I don't know when they're coming out, but those Off-White Futura Dunk Lows. I mean, I'm just a huge Futura fan, so it's dope to see him back, you know, in the sneaker world, kind of getting a little bit of love from the hype of Off-White and Virgil Abloh. How about you, Mike?
Yeah. Man, I'm going to follow suit with another Nike. But it's actually, you guys talked about this one, one of the episodes I wasn't able to get on, but I keep seeing these PSG Jordan 6s, and they're nice. I like the all gray with the red hits, or the gray and black monochrome hits with the red. So that's my pick.
Not a bad pick at all.
Yeah, I dig those too. It was kind of interesting, kind of off topic, on topic, I don't know, but to delay getting off here, the Jordan Paris Fashion Week stuff was kind of interesting to see. What do you guys think about that?
My favorite thing came from the internet with all of the Jordan brand athletes, and oh my God, why is your name slipping away from me?
Mello?
No, her. No. The WNBA player that's sponsored in the picture. Yeah, the joke is there's 10 rings in this picture, and 6 of them are for the owner, and the other 4 are not from any of the males here.
Oh, man. I didn't see that, but that's pretty good.
I thought that was great. I'm like, yeah, show me the boss now. More. Like, But, yeah, man, there's some cool shoes that come out of there. Nothing, I think I liked it was the Friends and Family K54 Jordan 8. I think it's the white pair. It's probably my favorite ones that came out of there. But
I like the freaking the shorts. I see Nick DiPaolo wearing those fun shorts.
And this thing was Mellow War?
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole jumpsuit of it. Like, they make a whole outfit. Speaking of Mellow, quit hating on Mellow, people. He has more buckets in the NBA than your favorite NBA player has. Like, put some respect on it. Like, yeah, it breaks my heart. Melo's a beast, man. People just hate on him. But I love you, Melo.
He might end up on your team next year, so.
I don't want that, but. It's respect, though. Go sit time, go smoke your cigars, live that New York lifestyle away from the Lakers, but don't hate on them, though.
I was such a huge Melo fan. I just feel like as a fan, he's just like constantly breaking his followers' hearts by, you know, with all the antics and all the lack of, you know, commitment, it seems like. And obviously, like, he's an incredible player, but I don't know, man. It's tough to continue to be a fan and support. But
yeah, I mean, sometimes it's just a time problem. It's okay. I mean, if you would just commit to coming off the bench, I think he would be in a good spot for a few more years. But I mean, shooters want to shoot, man, and he can't help it. He wants to be out there.
Yep. All right, so before we get out of here, I wanted to pose a question to everybody that's listening. How do you think the closure of stores should be handled, you know, from a brand standpoint? Or, you know, like, how could Nike have done this better? Or should we not be jumping to conclusions and maybe finding out a little more about this? What do you think about this whole kind of topic of Premier Boutique? And, again, if you want to, like, support them and grab some stuff from them, 30% off the whole site right now, it's premierboutique.com. But my name is Nick Engvall. You can follow me at Nick Engvall on all platforms. More importantly, follow at Sneaker History everywhere. And guys, let them know how they can find you.
Yeah, you guys find me on Sneaker History. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, at MadWatcher789. And then from there, you go ahead and look for Robbie. Where you at, man?
Find me on Photoshop trying to find a way to put a do-rag on Michael Cera. So... That's it. I'll be there the next couple of days. So you'll find me on the internet after that. But mostly go follow Sneaker History. That's what's up. Go follow that.
All right, cool. Well, we appreciate all of you listening, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
See you.
Bye.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I want to ask a few favors of you. First off, if you're still listening, I wanted to thank you for supporting us and continuing to listen to our podcast. If you're enjoying it, and I'm going to assume that you do if you're listening this long, please take a couple of minutes, head over to iTunes, drop us a review, leave a comment, make sure you're subscribed. It's the only way that we can really continue to grow our audience and reach new people and continue to grow the podcast. Second thing is, if you haven't already, head over to sneakerhistory.com/shop. You can pick up t-shirts, coffee mugs, stickers, and some other miscellaneous things. And all of these things go to help us continue this podcast, to continue the site, and just pay for miscellaneous expenses that come up. We're not trying to make a killing off of it, but it would be awesome to have your support. And who knows, maybe run into one of you on the streets one day rocking a Sneaker History t-shirt. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly 2 decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.